phone. Can you hear me all right? Excellent. So I am coughing this morning, and I haven't been coughing until now. It's really annoying. For this series, we were allowed to choose which bit of the Easter story we wanted to preach on. I really like having a person to focus on. I like hermeneutics. I like knowing who's speaking, who they're speaking to, what the context is. I really like all of that stuff. So I have chosen Peter and his part in Jesus' last few days in the crucifixion and the resurrection. I went down so many rabbit holes with this. I've spent weeks, I know loads about Peter now, I can share any number of things. I wanted to share a couple of bits I have cut out. So I did a whole bit of research on the Jewish education system between the ages of 5 and 30, and all about that. I did go down the rabbit hole of naked night fishing, which apparently was a thing. We looked, didn't we? King James Bible, naked night fishing. I won't be preaching on that today. So, I feel like in the Gospels, Peter is often the person we relate to most. As a personality, he's quite impulsive. He's quick to act, and he does things, and they don't always go well. And I feel like he asks all the stupid questions on our behalf so that we don't have to. I feel like he's a really good touch point for sort of a really human response to Jesus. So, Peter is called Simon, Simeon, there's a SH beginning word, and Simon Peter, but I'm going to call him Peter throughout the preach, just for sort of continuity, because it's a bit odd to say different names. So Jesus renames Simon Peter in Matthew 16, but we're just going to say Peter. So Peter was from Bethsaida, which is a fishing town, or was a fishing town, on the north of the Sea of Galilee. So if you imagine the Sea of Galilee, it's right at the top. It's not currently a town, like an inhabited town, but archaeology has shown that it was a mix of Jewish and non-Jewish. So they've dug up sort of pig bones, catfish bones. Catfish apparently are not kosher because they don't have scales and they're scavengers. So I learned that as well. So he will have grown up in sort of a mixed society, but then by the time Jesus called him, he lived in Capernaum, which was a almost entirely Jewish fishing town. And it's just a little bit west of Bethsaida. So I skip about a little bit and lose myself. So Peter was a fisherman. He was in partnership with James and John, who were the sons of Zebedee, and with his brother Andrew. And it looks like, so to be a fisherman, the boat's quite big. You need sort of 5 or 6 people or more to row, to chuck the nets out, all of that. Fishing taxes were quite high on the Sea of Galilee, so you'd need to be in a business. And actually building the boats was quite expensive, so they had their industry. They also had hired men that worked with them. So Capernaum was a moderate-sized town. It was around 1,000 to 1,500 people. It was not as fancy as Tiberias with its glass and statues. And it wasn't as big business as Magdala, which had fish processing plants at this time. It was a low to middle income town where the main business was fishing, which is long time and smelly. A lot of Jesus' ministry took place in Capernaum, which I didn't know, so I learned a thing. So he was in Jerusalem in that as well, but a lot of the miracles and stuff were in this fairly small, fairly sort of lower class town in this, you know, this quite contained place. It's interesting. So Matthew 4 tells us that Jesus left Nazareth and went to live in Capernaum after the temptation in the wilderness. So Peter was either married or widowed, because Jesus healed his mother-in-law, and you can't have a mother-in-law without having a wife. The Apostle Paul later says in 1 Corinthians that Peter was married at that time. He said, do we not also have a right to take along a believing wife, as do the other apostles and Peter? So I'm not sure how much to do and how much to skip. So I got really interested in how old Peter and the apostles were. It's just fascinating to imagine, because they were all real people who did real things. This is all this is stuff that actually happened. So the best guess is really that some of the other disciples were really quite young, sort of between the age of 15 and 19. And so Jesus refers to them as little children, which he kind of wouldn't have if they hadn't actually been little children. And also some of their behaviour is quite impulsive. They're quite they're not always very mature. So Peter is likely to have been closer to Jesus in age. He's likely to have been sort of at least over 20. He wouldn't have been as old as Jesus, because you followed a rabbi until you were 30. You wouldn't have followed him before that. And Jesus is very clearly referred to as a rabbi by himself, his disciples, his enemies. So there was a structure in place that tells us that Peter would have been younger than 30, but older than 20. So I also wonder, because Jesus is so close to Peter, so we hear Peter's mentioned more in the New Testament than all of the other disciples put together. So we hear a lot more about Peter, and I do wonder if that age similarity sort of helped that closeness. I'm still reading between the lines, isn't it? There's an interesting argument, when Peter's asked if Jesus pays temple tax, and Jesus says, well, I kind of don't have to because I'm the Son of God, but I will anyway. And he tells Peter to go and catch a fish, and it's got 2 coins. And so that's enough to pay for Jesus and Peter, but not the other disciples. And you only pay temple tax if you're over 20. So again, that's just sort of interesting little snips of stuff. So I spent a lot of my preparation time learning about Peter, and then I did a little panic at the last minute and go, it's the Easter story bit. So I then had to focus on, Peter at the time of the crucifixion. So at the point that the Easter story that involves Peter is happening, Peter spent 3 years travelling with Jesus. He's your rabbi, you lived with them. You travelled with them, you cooked for them. You left your home, you followed your rabbi. So it was really intense, sort of 3 years together. So he's witnessed Jesus healing the sick, raising the dead to life, delivering people from demons, doing many miracles, both fish-related and non-fish-related. There's a lot of fish. He's been with Jesus on the Mount of Transfiguration, where Jesus' full godness shows. It's sort of the language used is sort of describing a bright white light, I think. I am going to cry, I warn you. But just the sense that Peter would have seen Jesus being God. It was extraordinary. So he's had this 3 years with Jesus, but oh, this is not going to go well. I'm just going to keep talking, so ignore me wobbling. So I think Peter did not get at all that Jesus would have to suffer and die. I don't think he got it. So we did training yesterday. We finished the Old Testament on leaves. It's been hard work. But it was very clear that the Jewish people were expecting a king, Messiah, who would go into battle on their behalf, who would fight, who would overturn the occupying forces, who would establish Israel in Jerusalem as this strong, conquering people. That's what they were expecting right at the end of the Old Testament. That's what they were expecting. That's what Peter would have expected. He would have expected Jesus to fight and conquer. So Jesus has started explaining that the Messiah must suffer and die. There's this bit, the two chunks go really close together. There's the bit where Jesus says to Peter, "Who do you say I am?" And Peter says, "You're the Christ, the Son of the living God." And Jesus is like, "Yes, God has revealed this to you." But then like a couple of verses later, Jesus is saying, "I need to go to Jerusalem, I'm going to suffer, I'm going to die." And Peter's like, "No, Lord, this must never happen to you." So he's kind of got it, but he absolutely hasn't got it. And it's the bit where Jesus said, get behind me, Satan, which is like, it's really harsh. But it is very much sort of Peter clearly just hadn't got what it's going to look like. Okay. So Peter's bit in the Easter story is hard. I find it quite hard. It's he's doing so well. He's got the 3 years with Jesus. It's amazing. And then it just gets worse and worse and worse. So we're going to just have a little scoot through that. So Peter's sort of doing all right. Jesus asks him to go and get the upper room ready for the Passover meal. So him and John nip off to Jerusalem and get the room ready and get the food ready. And that, they wouldn't have known it was the Last Supper at the time, but that's the Last Supper, and that's sort of that really significant. It's almost like the calm before the storm. So Peter, in his impulsiveness, is very Peter. So Jesus was washing the disciples' feet, and Peter was initially like, "No, absolutely not. You're the important rabbi, the Christ, the Messiah. Don't wash my feet." And Jesus explains that in order for Peter to share in sort of the coming kingdom, he has to let him. And Peter's like, "Well, in which case, wash my head and wash my hands as well." He's really like, "Oh, well, in which case, do all of the things." And he is enthusiastic, but then as the supper goes on, Jesus starts talking about the fact that one of the disciples is going to betray him, and we know it's Judas Iscariot. So all of the Gospels say Peter made confident statements that he would never let Jesus down. Oh, poor Peter. Peter is so confident. He's like, "No, I will definitely stick with you. I will never do anything to let you down." And Jesus says, "You will deny me 3 times. And Peter says, "No, I definitely won't." So our key text comes in here. This is the bit that I found really helpful. So it comes just before, it's in Luke 22. It comes just before where Jesus says, "You're going to deny me 3 times. So Jesus says, "I have prayed for you that your faith may not fail. And when you have turned again, strengthen your brothers." And there's something in Jesus saying, you're gonna deny me, but I'm going to pray that your faith won't fail. And when you have turned, so when you've resolved it all, strengthen your brothers. So we will come back to that in a minute. So Jesus asks Peter and James and John to come and watch with him. I think when you really start thinking about sort of Gethsemane, it's just very hard. This is actually Jesus. So Peter and James and John couldn't stay awake. So Jesus is suffering. He's really distressed, and they sleep. And Jesus goes back to them and says, "Are you sleeping? Can you stay awake with me?" And they're like, "Yep, definitely." And then they nod off again. And Jesus goes back and says, why are you sleeping? Stay awake with me. And then the last time, he says, it's too late now, they're here. So then we get the chaos and the crowd and the noise. There's Judas with his nasty, sneaky kiss. There's like, it describes a big crowd of heavily armed people. And Jesus says, why are you heavily armed? I've been preaching every day in the temple. Why, you know, why do you come with swords and axes now? All of the Gospels say that one of the high priest servants had his ear cut off. It's only John that says, which it's just that impulsive, like, oh, I've just been asleep, it's been awful, there's this crowd, they're after Jesus, I'll just hack someone's ear off. And Jesus has to say, we're not doing it like that. We're not fighting, this has got to happen. So the Gospels tell us that the disciples scattered after Jesus' arrest. They all fled. So they've been so focused and so with him, and they've had the Last Supper together. It's all been wonderful. Jesus is arrested, and they scatter. They're gone. So we don't know where the others went, but the Gospels tell us that Peter follows at a distance. I think he's probably very much in fear of his own life. I think he thinks he's going to be arrested and killed. Him and John, they sort of follow and they go to the building. So how Jerusalem was built at this time, so the high priest's house is big, and the most important people on the top floor, and then it goes down in order of importance. So Jesus would have been sort of at the highest bit with the priest, and then much lower down, sort of physically, there would have been the courtyard for the servants. So there's Peter and John sort of in this really quite small courtyard, not really anywhere to hide. So they can't bear to abandon Jesus fully, but they're also really nervous. So they're sort of half. But then one of the servant girls said, weren't you with this man as well? And Peter's like, no, not me. No. And they hang around a bit longer. And another servant girl says, no, I think you were. And Peter's like, no, not me. And then someone else says, no, you've got a Galilean accent. You sound like him. You were definitely with him. And Peter, which I like knowing that they had an accent, like a, you know, Cornish accent or a Birmingham accent. Like they sounded like they were from Galilee. So Peter, at this point, it says he calls curses down on himself and swears he doesn't know Jesus. And then the cockerel crows, the rooster crows, and Peter remembers. And that is hard, that bit, isn't it? That moment of like, oh, I've done it. He said I'd do it. I said I wouldn't do it. I've done it. And it says Peter wept bitterly. I can imagine he did. So the bit after this, so I literally read through the Gospels and I Googled and everything. We don't know. We don't know where Peter went. There's no, so he weeps bitterly. And then he's gone. So none of the disciples were there. Oh, gosh. This is unusually bad even for me. I do apologise. So the Gospels say the women stayed. And John, the book of John says, John said, I think it's really important for him to say, I did hang around. But the rest of them are gone. They don't stay for the trial. They don't stay for the crucifixion. They're just not there. I find that really hard. I think, so for Peter, I think this is the lowest bit. This is the depth. This is the really awful bit. So I want to come back to our scripture, Luke 22. And the point I want to make is that Jesus knew all of this before it happened. So what Peter's experienced is really high points, really great. everything goes a bit badly wrong, everything goes awfully wrong, and he's down here. And Jesus has said already, I'm going to build my church on you. Pray that your faith won't fail, and when you have turned, strengthen your brothers, but you will deny me. So Jesus knew all of this was going to happen. He's told Peter, actually, but I think it's very hard stuff to hear for yourself. So in the same way, but none of this was a surprise to Jesus. If we mess up, it's not a surprise to Jesus. So Jesus chose Peter, knew he was going to build his church on him, but knew he was going to really, really mess up quite badly. And in the same way, Jesus knows that we're going to have patches where we don't follow him, we don't make good choices, we don't make good decisions. And he knows that, and he still chose us anyway. So for you today, if you feel like you've blown it, and if you feel like you've let Jesus down, if you feel far away from him, or you feel like he's disappointed in you, please know that Jesus always knew that this would happen. He chose you anyway, knowing everything that you would ever do wrong, and his words are the same for you. I prayed for you that your faith will not fail, and when you have turned again, strengthen your brothers. So it's the same. Peter represents us in a lot of ways in the Gospels, and I think he really does in this bit. So Jesus was fully aware what would happen when he chose you, all of your life, the whole lot. And if you are at a point where you're away from Jesus at the moment, he is patiently waiting for you to turn back so he can restore you. So if this is you, do something about it. There was definitely something in Peter had to turn again. He had to choose to continue to follow Jesus. He had to choose to get it all together again. But Jesus was waiting for him. And if this is you, Jesus is waiting for you to turn back. So, and also, it's just that hope. So we know Peter's story. We know he's down in the pit, and he came back up, and the church was built on him. You know, there's good stuff coming if you turn back to Jesus. So, I know it's not Easter yet, but I can't kind of leave Peter down in the pit. So, it does go very well for Peter. So, the next time we... Probably the next time we meet Peter, him and his mates have gone back fishing, the naked night fishing bit that we're not going to cover. They're out, they've fished all night, they've had no catch, it's all awful, and they're just a bit tired and they're sort of looking at coming in. There's a bloke on the beach with a fire lit, and then they see... He sort of shouts to them and says, let your net down on the other side. And they let the net down, and Jesus miracles a whole load of fish. Peter realises it's Jesus. He's so excited, he flings himself into the sea to swim to shore to bury Peter. And then there's that really beautiful restoration conversation. So Jesus says, do you love me? And Peter says, yes, I love you. And Jesus says, feed my sheep. And I don't know at what point Peter catches on that this is the three chances to say, I love you. So Peter denied Jesus three times, and Jesus gives him the opportunity to acknowledge him three times. But also there is something in the feed my sheep instruction that indicates that Jesus is sort of handing over the flock, the early church, the disciples, into Peter's care. And Peter does then become everything that we see him be. So the so different, isn't it? The Peter before the crucifixion is so different to the Peter of the early church. So the Peter of the early church is full of the Holy Spirit. He's preaching, he's leading, he's teaching. He's this respected, really good church leader. And it's the other side of the crucifixion. It's the other side of sort of being down in the pit. I feel like there's like a whole other preach on that. So Peter absolutely did become the rock on which Jesus built his church. He did. He became everything that Jesus always said he would. And I'm going to stop there. I don't know how long that was. And I do apologise for crying so much. Okay. Ian Delane, I'm looking at you, darling. I'm done.